with episode 591 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm not sure these streaming services realize who they're saying no to.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and geez, it feels like we've been gone for a while. I need to catch up.
All I can say is, God's in his heaven, all's right in the world. Okay, we are going to finally come back from our little mini hiatus here, and wow, we have quite a lot of news, to say the least. And now, what's really weird, and you know, I was kind of reminded of certain favorite things from over the years by the fact that I saw a number of pictures from San Diego Comic-Con this past couple days. I am jealous in some respects, not in some others.
Yeah, the line to Hall K, you can have that, but some of the displays and stuff have been amazing to see the pictures of.
Yes, indeed, indeed. But what that means is that we have a whole lot of stuff. Basically, our news show has become kind of like Last Week Tonight, but the geek version. And so, yeah, we are going to cover the stuff from the last 2 weeks, and then all this stuff that's coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, we're probably going to talk about next week. That's just kind of the way that it works. But that means that we have plenty of time to really dig into all of the ways that we want to probably mock the news. But anything else that we need to say about this one, Edmund? Disclaimer wise?
We will try and enlighten you. We will hopefully not depress you too much, as we've had a tendency to do in recent months. But you're going to be spoiled on some things. But as ever in the news show, we're hoping it's things that please you.
Yeah, well, we're not going to start in a very good place, unfortunately, because as this has turned out to be the year where we basically start our news week with... obituaries. Yeah, and this one, unfortunately, kind of is a kick to the gut for anyone who's a progressive rock music fan. Ironically, this happened the night that I was at the 40th anniversary tour concert for Rush, watching Geddy Lee, the maestro on the bass, as another of his contemporaries, unfortunately passed. Chris Squire, the bassist for Yes, has unfortunately lost his very short battle with leukemia. He died at the age of 67. And yeah, this was a matter of, I think, 6 to 7 weeks after his announcement. It was real quick. And I mean, that one was very unfortunate. He was the mainstay for the band from day one. And quite frankly, Yes was always one of my favorite bands over the years, even when they had some extended times off. It was always fun to throw in one of their albums on the playlist, so to speak. And Yes was actually the first band I went to go see in right out of high school when I went to a concert on my own for the first time. It was during their 91 tour. And I have very good memories of watching his bass solo using binoculars and wondering how a person could play that fast. I've since learned that he's not the only one who does that, but it was a memorable concert experience. So I am very sorry to see him go. Definitely the musical world is going to be the lesser for it. What's very interesting, though, is that despite the fact that Chris Squire was the one that kept the band going all these years, even with many, many departures over time, he's not leaving the band in a point where they're going to call it a quits. They've now basically another former member has come in to step in his place on the current tour that they're on, and it looks like they're going to make a go of maintaining and staying active. So who knows? Maybe we're going to see a real turnover in the generational shift for the band. But it is kind of their way to keep going and just keep turning over members of the band. They've been doing it since the second album. So. There we are.
Yeah. Even when, as you said, when there was large mass defections out of the band, Squire, you know, always stayed with it and just sort of had to become the face after John Anderson left the band. You know, that longtime fans could identify with. So it's a big loss for them. And while he might not have always been the front man, he did do a lot of the background vocals, and he was very instrumental to the band for setting sort of the sound of them. So it's going to be a big loss. It's not that they've been coming out with new music lately, but even the old stuff, it's going to be hard to beat his talents.
Hey, Gary, they came out with an album last year.
As I said,
yeah.
They haven't been out with any new music since. Yes, I thought they Good came try. Out with that new album, but I don't
I can understand your sentiment, however. Anyhow, the next piece of news here, for those who want to get a little more depressed.
Yes, also this week, we did lose Omar Sharif, died at age 83, of course, made an extraordinarily memorable and famous debut in movies in Lawrence of Arabia as Sharif Ali, appearing out of the haze in the desert to rescue Mr. Lawrence, and went on to, of course, after that David Lean epic, also starred in Dr. Zhivago a few years later, which sort of cemented him as a leading man, and you know, very debonair and exotic with his being Egyptian, and certainly for Hollywood at the time that was a little unusual, went on to of course a long career, and also pursuits off the camera, perhaps most notably his being a contract bridge expert and author of a actual newspaper, daily newspaper bridge column for many, many years, which I just know the basic rudiments of bridge, I actually enjoyed reading the column because him describing these strategies that I could probably never implement myself if I was behind the cards, but you could certainly tell the extraordinary depth of knowledge and strategy that he had. His career never sort of completely foundered, but he did sort of was out of the public eye for a while, but in the last 10 years or so has had a number of notable roles in some more independent films and some foreign films, and he did have a nice long run, but it's still sad to see him go.
Yeah, it just seems like we're at that point where a lot of the luminaries are starting to pass on. We've seen it happen week after week, it seems. So can we just have like 1 or 2 weeks without anything?
Yes, please.
Can we also stage guards and nurses next to George R. R. Martin for just a little while? and get him a dictation staff stat. Yes, so let's maybe move on to some things that are a little bit... Oh, no, this isn't going to help. Edmund.
Well, there's no more deaths, right?
The news that yes, I was referring to earlier, that when the news of NBC dropping Hannibal came about, there was hope, because this Hannibal has always been an international co-production. Gaumont in France is actually the main producer, that they might be able to cobble together something, had approached both Netflix and Amazon, since given the rise of their own productions and streaming shows. It certainly seemed like a potentially good fit, but Brian Fuller did in fact tweet out that both of them have passed, but they are still... At the time, they were still officially investigating possibilities. I know since then, there's actually word that the actors have now been released from their contracts. So the prospects are looking dimmer and dimmer for more Hannibal on our small screens. So it seems to be this sort of slow death, and rather excruciating death. But given Hannibal's predilections, that is probably appropriate somehow.
This is all very depressing. We're not starting off with fireworks here. Gary, maybe this next...
I think I know what the story you're talking about. And while perhaps it is some consolation to Hannibal, other people are still probably cringing in fear as I talk about this. Fatal Attraction is going to take a stab at television. Yes, the iconic 87 movie Fatal Attraction that starred Glenn Close and Michael Douglas is being recrafted into a television series event. We don't know how close it'll come to it yet, but it has been greenlighted. The movie itself was rather popular, and if you enjoyed The Killing in Hannibal, I think perhaps you might get to see a little bit in this coming series. Now, they refer to it as a series event, so I'm guessing it's not ongoing, but rather perhaps a miniseries or a very short series. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, this being Fox and their recent penchant for these event series, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way that they went. It may be for the better, one way or the other. But let's maybe take a turn towards cable and see if we can... Well, we've got some things here that can be termed as good news for some and maybe not so good news for others. Let's see, on the Sci-Fi Channel, it turns out that they have helped our friends up in the Great White North to renew a third season of Bitten. Yes, I'm a little bit happy to hear about that. And yeah, it's one of those guilty pleasure shows more often than not, but still, it has been much better than it was when it first started out, and I am happy to see that it's going to get a third season. The second season, it ended a little dodgy, but it, for the most part, it was pretty solid. A show that is trying, I guess, to maintain its standing against The Simpsons as the animated show that will never die is South Park, and it is renewed now through 2019.
Sweet.
You know that they announced that they're actually putting out a sequel to the Stick of Truth game?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, they are. I'm quite shocked and pleased and appalled all at the same time.
I still have to finish that as Jesus. Anyway.
Yes. And so, yes, we have a renewal of two shows that certainly have their audience there. And, well, we are, for better or worse, we are going to have to wait until 2017 to see the – now it's being just unofficially, perhaps. I'm wondering if this is now the official way they're looking at it. Twin Peaks Season 3, the longest hiatus between seasons in recent memory. But, yes, it's been delayed until 2017. I have no doubt that this is because of how the whole that whole deal went down with David Lynch, where not only did they secure him as kind of the mastermind behind it again, but part of that was – effectively doubling the episode order. So yeah, they're going to have to kind of rethink how they're going to do this a little bit. So that's probably going to take a little bit more time and twice as long to film. It just, I have to say, we're getting a third season of Twin Peaks that's 18 episodes long. That's longer than some seasons of shows now. That's almost as long as its second season. This is really strange. But doesn't that just go with the topic at hand?
I just have a few requests. I would like the midget to talk regularly, and I would like to see a diner scene with more pie. That's
all. You'll get one of those.
Yes, definitely.
But not both. All right, Gary. This next one is probably not too much in terms of news that we're overly excited about, but I do know that there are others who host on the VOG network, particularly over at Pod Culture, that will be pleased with this.
Absolutely. The news from MTV, gosh, remember when they used to play videos? Anyway, that the series Teen Wolf has been renewed for its sixth season. So as best I know, it's been getting decent reviews. So I guess they liked it enough that it's being renewed for yet another season. I can't say that I follow it, and I don't believe we do any reviews on it. But as you said, we do have friends out in the podosphere that that really enjoy the show. So yay for them.
Yeah, this is one of those shows that it has a following, that's for sure. And like I said, people that we know follow it fairly religiously, I guess you could say, or at least happily. Maybe it's their guilty pleasure, but there we are. I mean, six seasons, that's pretty impressive for a show that I didn't think was going to actually go at all. So it's Teen Wolf. Apparently, it's nothing like the original movie, though. It's like it's almost like I don't know. I was going to say Twilight, but I was going to say if Twilight was written well and for a teen audience, it's the Vampire Diaries with werewolves, but they've got werewolves. I'm so confused. Anyway, moving on. If it will open for you, Gary.
Yes, and actually, I watched this series too, so I'm kind of thrilled about it. The series Ballers on HBO, who features our Dwayne The Rock Johnson, has been renewed for a second season. He's a aspiring financial investor, broker, who tries to sign up athletes, be the NFL primarily is what they're doing, but they give the hint that it could go into other places. And it's been pretty good. His timing is reasonable, and I enjoy watching it. They're keeping it fresh. So I'm really glad to hear that. So we'll have to see what happens with that. I do have one other thing that I'd like to mention, John. I missed it in our earlier segment with deaths, and you didn't bring it up, but I'd like to. We also had another death this week. Was Jerry Weintraub has passed on. He was notably famous for introducing the Karate Kid. He was also responsible for the movie Diner, as well as the Ocean 11's 12 and 13 movies that came out. He started his career actually managing Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, Neil Diamond, and even Led Zeppelin before he got into movies So he had quite a long career, and I think everybody will be a little bit less excited with him not around. He was also responsible for several HBO specials in his later years, and he was a heck of a guy. And one of his phrases was, "I know a guy," and he could usually knew somebody that could could do just about anything he needed done in the entertainment industry. HBO ran a special on his life back in 2011 called His Way, and I'd heartily recommend it. He was quite a dynamic person.
Yeah, definitely one of the old school producers, and hugely respected in the industry.
We were trying to bring the episode up.
I know, but I met the guy one time, and I can't say he's an idol per se. I admire his life, so I just wanted to share that.
No, it's completely understandable, and yeah, I mean that's the trouble. When unfortunately, we haven't had our. We haven't had our dearth of these kinds of news items this year, as I said before. But thank you for bringing that one up, Edmund. I don't know. This isn't getting any better.
Yeah. Well, perhaps this will make some people happy. But we've gotten word that Mary Saltzman, the daughter of Harry Saltzman, the James Bond producer, has apparently secured the rights to do a James Bond stage show, which will be called. Very creatively, yeah. James Bond, the musical. No exclamation point, though. But apparently, music and lyrics are being written. So they're putting a script together. They're saying it will feature several Bond villains, plus some new ones, and even their own Bond girl. Well, one would assume so. The actual production dates are not yet finalized, but they are pushing for late 2017, early 2018. And it might open on Broadway, or it might open in Las Vegas. And naturally, we have no casting announcements yet. But we will, of course, let you know once we find out.
A James Bond musical.
Yes.
Okay. I really don't know how to react to that.
Yeah, I just imagine James Bond walking into a room and bursting into song. I mean, it just sort of.
I can't wait for the rousing rendition of "Shaken Not Stirred."
Yes,
it should bring down the house.
That's another T-shirt my daughter stole from me. Anyway.
Now, I mean, if that doesn't excite you, perhaps this will. We have word that the new James Bond ongoing comic series from Dynamite Entertainment has tapped Warren Ellis to write them some books, and interestingly, Warren has weighed in a statement saying that, of course, Ian Fleming's James Bond is an icon, and it's a delight to tell visual narratives with the original brutal, damaged Bond of the books. So, yes, this is much as comics are often compared to movies on the page. Here, they are apparently taking their inspiration from the original books, which, of course, the Casino Royale with Daniel Craig did to a certain extent, but still had to keep to some of the movie conventions. Certainly in the hands of Warren Ellis conspiratorial and certainly with his knowledge of the source material, I think this could be quite intriguing, and I'm certainly much feeling much better about picking up some of these books than I am about hunting down a ticket to the musical.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably a fairly ubiquitous feeling. They'll certainly come out sooner and more widely.
Yes. They are actually, I see here, they are expected to drop the same month that Spectre, the latest Bond film, hits theaters this coming November.
All right, then. Okay. I feel like we're picking up a little bit. We're picking up. We're getting things that are a little more positive. Gary, can we keep this going?
We sure can, John. And listen, I know you said that you didn't want to talk about Comic-Con, but darn it, I got really big news here, and I can't wait till the next time we talk about news to let this out. The creator of The Tick is joining the second season of Powers on the PlayStation Network.
Really?
I expected more than that. But yes, yes, he is. They are going full throttle with season two, and they've brought on the creator of The Tick to throw a little bit more humor and weirdness into it. To quote him exactly, the platform that we're involved with on PlayStation is a new medium. There's no lid. How cool and weird and exciting can we make it? So you know, they are picking up where they left off. Let's see. Edmund did do the spoilers.
Yeah.
So, geez, it's still going to hurt people. But anyway, what the heck? They're going to go through season two, and Walker is going to become obsessed over finding Retro Girl's killer.
Well, that's. I would say that's hardly a shock, given where the season ended.
Are they going to do it on $5 or $10? That's the question that I need answered.
Well, that's okay because, you know, they are bringing in, for people not somewhat familiar with the mythos, they are bringing Super Shock into the equation now. He's considered the most powerful person in the Powers universe, and has been out of sight until recently. So, and he does have a bluish hue to him. So, I imagine it'll be easier for the Tick writer. But yeah. That being said, you know, basically the problem when Retro Girl isn't around to police the city anymore is that everything starts to go to crap, and so they have to not only figure out who killed her, but figure out how to stabilize the city without her active involvement.
Yes, indeed. And I realize we should probably actually mention that we are talking about Ben Edlund, who, in addition to creating The Tick, has also, of course, been responsible for, writing on a lot of the series like Angel or Firefly, but perhaps most notably as far as what we've covered on this program, some of the Supernatural episodes like The French Mistake. And, so certainly his ability to go weird and meta is well established.
Yeah, he's been in the writing room for an awful lot of shows that we've talked about. I definitely remember when he moved into Angel way back in the day. And she's, like you said, recently Supernatural. And I think he was involved with Gotham too, right? Did you mention that one or am I imagining things?
I did not, but yes, I believe so.
Yeah, not that that's a great thing, but anyway. Yeah, we'll maybe leave that one alone. However, I'm feeling better about this. I think we're getting somewhere, and I'm definitely feeling better about this next piece of news. But for my anime fans out there that also enjoy Attack on Titan and are really interested in seeing this live-action adaptation sooner rather than later, not having to wait for the Japanese version to leak out with, fan-submitted English subtitles, no, we're going to get to see it faster than that, because Funimation Entertainment has obtained the rights to distribute the film to theaters, home entertainment, video on demand, and broadcast in North America.
Wow.
So, yes. Now, the films in Japan, the first part is the 1st of August, and the second part is mid-September. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be available here in the U.S., but what I hear is that sometime later in August is when they're actually going to have this. So it could be that fast. Which would be pretty amazing. Now, from what I understand, speaking of San Diego Comic-Con, by the time that this goes out, there will have already been some Attack on Titan live-action panels and such in San Diego. So I'm hoping at that point, at the kind of premiere of the film that they're going to show at San Diego Comic-Con, that there is more news about the distribution throughout the U.S. And if necessary, if I have to go into the city, oh darn, to go and see this, I'm sure I can talk at least a couple of members of my family to come with me. And subsequently buy cosplay materials. Anyway, next on the list. What do we have here? Is it me or is it someone else? Gary, this is interesting news.
Yeah, it is. It goes off of something that had been mentioned earlier and sort of puts a twist on it. What we're talking about is one of the many Star Wars movies that is coming out. This particular one we're talking about is the Han Solo feature. The Lucasfilm announced that the Lego movie directors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, are attached to direct this first appearance of Han Solo by himself. The script has been written by Lawrence Kasdan of Return of the Jedi fame. And his son, to deal with the events of how Han Solo became a smuggler. And so they haven't released much on it, except that the date to come out is supposedly May 25th of 2018. This doesn't necessarily supersede the Han Solo Boba Fett movie that had been talked about. However, it wasn't mentioned whether this is in replacement for it or an addition to it. So we'll have to see. It's not really clear if Boba Fett's been separated, or they might actually go through with the dual film. So that we'll have to see. But in the meantime, everybody's waiting for the first spinoff, which is going to be the Rogue One movie in December of next year. So once again, they are planning far ahead and putting pieces into place. So we can only hope for the best.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in this particular production because, well, Rogue One does have a nice kind of separated from the main continuity thing going for it. So they have a lot of room to maneuver and do kind of whatever they want with it. This one would be kind of putting I'm guessing if it's going to be kind of a set earlier in the timeline, that it's going to put to canon some of Solo's history. And I think it's pretty much the first time that they've officially done anything in a long time. I know that there was in the old EU type stuff, there were layers upon layers, but I don't know that they've given any indication where they're going with Han Solo's past in the new canon, and I guess this is why. But I'm interested in seeing it, certainly. I'm guessing there's going to be some very aggressive watchers as far as any news about casting. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay, so what do we have next on the list? Knowing my luck, it's me. Oh, of course it is. All right, well, I did say things were picking up. I didn't say that my attention was. All right. We have some news about... Wait. We are on top of this tonight. Okay.
Tease these effects.
Yes, I know. It's almost like we have powers budget. All right. Michael K. Williams from The Wire and Boardwalk Empire he's going to be joining two films coming up. The first one that is probably... well, trepidation for most people is that he's going to be in a supporting role in the Ghostbusters project that we've been hearing an awful lot about. And I don't know that everyone's particularly thrilled about it, but we're going to go ahead and move past that. He is also going to be in a supporting role in the upcoming Assassin's Creed film adaptation that begins filming this fall with Mr. Michael Fassbender.
Ooh.
And apparently he will be... In the film as a character with, quote-unquote, a major stake in the franchise, and thus expected to co-star in any potential future sequel. Interesting, especially for those of us who know the lore rather well and what that could possibly portend. But yes, it sounds like he is getting some roles in some very high-profile films. Yes, not sure what the effect of him being in that Ghostbusters reboot thing means. But anyway, I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in this casting segment of our show. But Edmund, I can at least say this counts as good news for me, at least in terms of adding one viewer to the ratings for this show.
Hardly surprising, but no, this is casting news that Emily Kinney, who of course was so unceremoniously jettisoned from The Walking Dead this past season, one of the places she has now landed is on the, as this goes out, the just-returned Masters of Sex on Showtime. She will be playing a former neighbor of the Masters, who is now in her 20s, and signs up to be one of the sex surrogates in Masters and Johnson's sex studies. Apparently we'll be spanning multiple episodes. As John said, that will be interesting.
Yeah, there's some other casting news buried in there a little bit, if I recall from reading the article.
It's also letting us know that she's joining fellow guest stars Maggie Grace, Josh Charles, and Tate Donovan. So it's been kind of a staple of this show. They've gotten some really quality actors, and it looks like season 3 is going to be no exception.
Hmm. Yeah, I know that the last season it seemed like the show was kind of in a rut, but we'll see whether or not they can break out of it. And to be honest, I mean, I was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there. Part of the reason that I am looking to return to kind of pick up with the third season and see how it goes is that I did read a couple advance reviews of the first few episodes, and apparently they are coming back strong.
Yes.
So fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good casting. good advanced reviews. Let's see how it goes.
Yes. Yeah. And I think the major huge difference is they are time jumping to I think it's starting just before right around the time that the famous first study gets published. So I think that certainly makes for a lot more dramatic potential than that sort of more fallow period of their lives that they were exploring last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a creative direction was definitely needed in terms of a shift.
Yes.
But there we are. All right, and let's see what comes up next. I believe, Gary, you're next up here. Oh, and I know that this was good news for a lot of people.
Oh, yes, it was. We're talking about some casting for the second season of Daredevil on Netflix. Marvel announced this week that Elodie Young, you might know her from the G.I. Joe Retaliation or The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, was cast to play...
I'm sorry, I was just thinking, boy, that is a wild shift from one to the other. But anyway.
Yeah, I know. She's a diverse actress, I guess.
There you go.
Anyway, she has been tapped to play Elektra in the second season of Daredevil. This version of Elektra Natchios, I thought she was Greek. Anyway, is described as a mysterious woman from Matt Murdock's past whose dangerous and exotic ways may be more than he can handle. Now, the character of Elektra has been already name-dropped, I believe, between Matt and Foggy at least one time during the first season. So they have been laying the groundwork for her. And, of course, if you're familiar with the comic books at all, you'll know that Elektra is a very pivotal character in the Daredevil mythos. So it's nice that they're not holding back and bringing her in and shaking things up. In the comics, she was also known to be a member of the Hand, which was also mentioned in the first season as well. And, of course, we have the major protagonist for season two being the character of the Punisher, or Frank Castle. So we it sounds like things are neatly coming into place, and I'm quite optimistic for season two. If they can do half as good a job, it's still going to be an incredible season to watch.
Mm-hmm. And yes, they did mention that Elektra was, or when they name dropped her, they didn't really name drop so much as talk about, yeah, that Greek girl. I'm guessing that's who they're referring to. Yes. Here. And they've cast her. Yay. All right. Edmund, I know that this isn't the best of news, but we'll just try to keep this good feeling going.
Returning to the Ghostbusters reboot, we have heard that they have cast their villain, and it will be Neil Casey. Of course, who exactly he is playing is being kept under tight wraps. Let's see. And Neil Casey—he's been on Veep and The League, and perhaps most importantly, currently stars in Paul Feig's Yahoo Screen series Other Space. So we know where the director knows him from. And since they're being so tight-lipped about everything, I think that's about all I can say.
That's probably a good thing. All right, and let's see. This next piece of casting news is for me, of course, because I wasn't paying full attention. Again, we'll get back on track. Don't worry. This one, though, is one that kind of threw me for a loop, and I had to put it in here because Marissa Tomei is apparently, it was kind of put as it had been confirmed, but then it has since been walked back a little bit as not having been completely confirmed. Anyway, apparently they are really close to or really want to cast her as Aunt May in the next Spider-Man movie. Now, look, I understand they're the new Peter Parker, being played by Tom Holland, is supposed to be in his late teens, and therefore a quote unquote much older Aunt May could indeed be around the age that Marissa Tomei is now. However, as the picture in this article points out rather dramatically, for a 50-year-old, she doesn't look that bad at all. And so for me, it's just a little strange to think that Marissa Tomei, who, as I said, not unattractive, playing Aunt May.
Wow, really went out there, not unattractive.
Yeah, I'm trying to be very. I'm trying not to put it the way that I want to put, which is like Aunt May. Really, whoa. Having been a longtime reader of Spider-Man, I'm having some strange feelings about this one.
Your brain just wants a short circuit when you
it does.
May and her together. Yes. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. If you remember My Cousin Vinny or The Wrestler and think of Marissa Tomei's performances, and then say Aunt May in the same sentence.
Doesn't quite compute, no.
No, it really doesn't.
She's going to be feisty.
I guess so.
Yes. But certainly
something now that Uncle Ben's not around.
Yeah. I mean, but certainly it's the long time Hollywood trend of sort of going I mean, what's kind of ironic about this is, you know, we had, so, you know, had Sally Field as Aunt May, which was even, you know, potentially, you know, a bit of a stretch, and certainly for the, you know, the woman who got cast as Forrest Gump's mom when she was I think she's 6 years older than Tom Hanks. So, you know, yeah, but this seems to be taking the trend in to an extreme. So yeah, I'm with you, John. I was quite taken aback when that got announced.
I felt old. Oh, Marissa Tomei. Wait, Aunt May?
Someone fixed that. I thought they were going to go with a mature Mary Jane. Oh, okay, she's going to be. Oh, wait, May?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Thanks, Marvel, Sony, whoever is responsible for that. All right, well, in somewhat less disturbing news to my psyche, Alison Sudol, who is, of course, coming off of her performance on Dig and Transparent on Amazon, and is also the mastermind, I guess you could say, behind A Fine Frenzy, the band, has joined the cast of Harry Potter spinoff Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. She will be playing Queenie, the sister of Catherine Waterston's character Tina, who both encounter Newt Scamander in New York. So just as a slight recollection here or reminder, this is the film, the prequel, that's being written by J.K. Rowling herself, and then being directed by David Yates, who was the director for the 5th through 8th Harry Potter film, so the visual aesthetic and the voice of the film should be very familiar to everybody. And it is set 70 years before Harry's own adventures, and it's pretty much only connected to the Harry Potter universe in the most kind of indirect of ways. It is not a direct prequel to the Harry Potter saga by any means, but it is set in the same universe, the same wizarding world. So there we are. All right, let's see. No news on whether or not she'll resume her red locks or go back to being blonde. We'll see. Gary, this next one. Just seeing commercials now for this show, so this is a little strange that this comes out at the exact same time.
It is coming off a little late, and it's set to premiere in at the end of September. So, yeah, they're cutting it pretty close to make a casting change. But it's not really a change so much as an addition. What we're talking about is Fox's Minority Report, the TV series. Originally, they had the actor Nick Zano playing both of the two Precog twins. However, they've decided to split that up and bring in a second actor. Sorry, I'm mixing the two up. Stark Sands was originally going to play both. Now Nick Zano is coming in to play one of the other twins. They're going to make them fraternal twins instead of identical. And they have had to reshoot back as far as the pilot to compensate for this, or at least parts of it. So, yeah, this is a little shakeup. Maybe they didn't feel they wanted more actors to carry the series. I'm not quite sure why the change was, but there it is.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I could also see. I mean, given their descriptions, that even though they're twins, they both have very different approaches to using their powers. Now that they're out in the world, with one of them being more inclined to help people, and the other one wanting to just enrich himself with wealth and power. So it may have been a case of the original actor not quite being able to bring enough difference between the two. Would be my reading between the lines, with absolutely no proof whatsoever on that. No, since I'm not a precog, so I can't tell. So.
No. Come on. I would have thought that, you know, you would have had some ability that would have helped you in this regard, but maybe not. Maybe not. All right. Damn PsyCorp. Anyway, Edmund, read my mind. What is the final news item here?
Well, our final news item is actually from Arrow. We've had Damian Dark being around but unseen up until now, and we now know that Neil McDonough will in fact be appearing as Damian Dark in season 4. Of course, probably most well known at the moment for our audience as Dum Dum Dugan over in the MCU, but of course a long-time stalwart of TV and film, I think he should be able to bring his usual dark intensity behind that blonde facade to this role. So this sounds like a good choice to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not bad casting choice. Like you said, he's kind of got some cred there in the genre, so why not? And it's nice to see that the two major universes kind of sharing.
Yes.
Right? Since they share the movie release schedule for the next 5 years pretty tightly. One of them is coming out with a movie soon by the time this comes out. Yeah. Yeah, so that's it for the last 2 weeks. Like I said, even as we speak, there are probably news items coming out of the woodwork that we're trying very diligently not to allow to seep into our news today, although I think Gary is probably biting his inside of his cheek trying not to spill about anything right now. But there we are. We have a little bit of time left, so guys, in the last 2 weeks, what you've been up to? Anything good, Edmund?
Well, I mean, so naturally we did have the holiday. That's why we were off. So, you know, yeah, some fireworks, some barbecue, and, just some nice relaxing, especially since around here, it's been so darn hot that, yeah, you just want to sort of, stay indoors, or at least if you're outside, just, find a cool drink and a nice umbrella to, shade yourself under.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's nice that down that part of the country, things have been relatively quiet. You know, nothing newsworthy at all going on. yeah. Gary, how about you? You been up to anything good the last couple of weeks?
I got to see movies both in my house and out of my house. I saw the Disney movie Inside Out, which I thought was very good, a nice family-friendly movie that the adults can be as entertained as the children are. Once again, Pixar manages to pluck at your heartstrings, not quite as hard as they can, but it was still there nonetheless, and I thought it was a well-crafted movie. And then I also got to see something that I can't wait to talk about Edmund with off-air. I finally watched The Kingsman, which I imagine Edmund especially enjoyed the genre as well as the mocks and homages on the James Bond franchises that I found amusing. And I regret not having seen it sooner. It was a very enjoyable film, and I'll probably watch it again. It was quite good.
Indeed. Remember, Oxford's not Brokes.
Absolutely.
All right. And yeah, definitely something that we can talk about another time.
Yes.
I did not get to see Inside Out, but my family did. And my wife reminds me every single time that it comes up as a commercial how much she bawled her eyes out watching it. So,
yeah.
For what I understand, there were some people that said that if, you know, maybe you're familiar with depression, you know, kind of touches a few chords, and after the beginning of this episode, I can understand people feeling that way, and a few other things. And speaking of depression, I was reminded a couple weeks ago that 2015 is the year in which the beginning of Neon Genesis Evangelion takes place, and I said, ah, wow, it's been so long, like 20 years since I watched that. I should start a rewatch of that. I'm on episode 16 of my rewatch, and I may need therapy. Infamously a very difficult psychological anime to watch, but interestingly enough, I am watching it with my daughter, who is of course a huge anime fan, so I figured it's certainly nothing she hasn't seen before, at least in terms of the intensity and so forth. But it's interesting to see something that is such a classic through the eyes of the next generation, who, you know, as the first few episodes, she's like, oh yeah, I've seen stuff like this before. Okay, whatever, you know, and then it gets into a little bit of the more, you know, like high school hijinks stuff. And she's like, oh really, this is the show you want me to watch? And I'm like, be patient. And then of course, you know, by the time that 4 or 5 episodes were done, one more, please. I was like, see, the classics hold up. Are you familiar? I know Edmund, you're familiar, because as soon as I said that I was watching it, you hit that like button pretty much instantly.
Oh, absolutely. And I gather, since you said episode 16, of course you are watching the original TV episodes. So I will be quite intrigued at the reaction once you get to the famous or infamous closing episodes, which I actually really liked. I mean, I caught up to the series later on in its life, and had heard, you know, through the grapevine. Fine. It's, you know, yeah, there's one of those endings that some people liked, and a lot of people just really threw them for a loop. And I actually thought it was a rather brilliant upending of everything that had been going on myself. So
well, not only do we have the full original run
yes.
to get through. But in fact, we do have the quote unquote reimagining of the ending, the mm-hmm. end of Evangelion
yep.
Film. And I'm sure you're aware, but I kind of have lapsed on this. And so I'm happy to have realized that, yes, there is the whole rebuild of Evangelion films that have been coming out in the last several years.
Exactly.
Only 3 out of 4 are available. Yeah, so it's like, I think somebody put it pretty well. Actually, it was Alan, who is, of course, Rob's partner over on Rob from Orange Lounge Radio. But he put it, people weren't happy with the original ending, and the last 20 years have been nothing but trying to retell that ending so that people will just understand what they were going for. But yeah, so there's plenty more to come where this started. And yeah, like I said, my daughter is still trying to get her brain around the fact that this is so popular because she barely even heard of it, which I think is amazing if she's so into anime. But as proof to the pudding, as I said, there are pictures and other things coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, just to bring this all the way around to the beginning. And, of course, we're all familiar with the cosplayer who goes by the name Riddle.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, yes. She posted a picture today that I shared with my daughter, and I said, yeah, just in case you were wondering if it's still popular, Riddle's running around in a Rey Eva plug suit. Ooh. So it's like, yeah, still very popular. Extremely popular. So, yeah, made me wish I were at San Diego Comic-Con once again. Gary, are you familiar with this particular title at all?
I mean, I know the name, but I'm not familiar with it, no.
Yeah, if I showed you people who were cosplaying from it, you'd probably go, "Oh, I've seen that."
So. No, actually, I don't think I have. I will hang my geek head in shame.
Well, I mean, I've seen things that are references to it that yeah. you would that you're like, "Oh, okay, I know what you're." Yeah, people who dress like that.
It's just I've never anime is not that I can appreciate it from time to time, but it's just not a passion of mine.
Oh, understandable. But yes, it has a certain reputation. Let's put it that way. So, anyway, as I said, this is the depressive news hour. But I promise the next 2 episodes this week are going to be chock full of episodic discussion. And while there are some psychological issues in some of these shows as well, we're certainly going to be talking about them in great detail and with much happiness and fervor. So without any further ado, next time we are going to be covering the shows from roughly 2 weeks ago. And then the following episode, we're going to catch all the way up. So, yeah. Hopefully we can jump right into that in our next show.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.